Morning. I have to confess something this morning to all of you. And my confession is, I've got a bit of an addiction. And you'll understand my addiction as soon as you see the next logo that comes up on the screen in just a second. My addiction is, wait for it. Anyone else do social media? Now, you might not be a Twitter person per se. It might be that Facebook is your thing or Instagram or whatever. But for me, it's Twitter. And here's how bad my addiction gets. I probably, and I counted this the other day just out of sheer interest, I probably look at my phone about 50 to 100 times every day just to see Twitter. I mean, isn't that bizarre? It's quite weird, actually. And it's not just to see what people do with the 280 characters they're allowed to use on each tweet. That's the maximum you're allowed to use. But it's also to see, is anyone responding to something that I have said? Now, it's bizarre, and I can't get my head around this, that if I make a comment on Twitter and somebody likes it, somehow I feel better about myself just because they've put their thumb on that like or the wee heart icon. Now, isn't that bizarre? It's pretty weird. I must be pretty weird. But I actually feel better about myself. And I got really chuffed recently because I discovered that I've got not just one or two, I have three persistent trolls. Now, they are not very nice in what they say about me. They have called me all kinds of stuff. And one of them must know me personally because they've even commented on my physical stature, which, as you can see, isn't particularly attractive. And they've made light of that fact. But I love the fact I've got my own trolls who every time I go on will say something really horrible or really nasty, and that just makes me feel good. Because it just shows that at least I'm not being ignored. They're listening. And so I find Twitter for that reason really, really interesting. It's psychologically bizarre, but it's interesting. But what I also find intriguing is this, that people who are passionate about stuff like Twitter. See, I'm passionate about my Christian faith for a start. Jesus genuinely is everything to me. Everything. And I'm passionate about ethics and the way our culture runs and about social justice and lots of other stuff, including politics itself. And so I just want to be out there to say something about what I believe in and to try and influence other people. And bizarre though it might seem, that's also something that Jesus would encourage, not necessarily Twitter per se, but he has asked us to be influential in our world as part of being a disciple. Now, in this series, we're thinking about different aspects of the Christian life. And one of the things that Jesus wants of us is that we are influential. And nowhere is that expressed more powerfully than this tremendous passage I'm going to read a few verses from in Matthew chapter 5. Now, just listen, lots of metaphors are being used here, but try to grasp what Jesus is saying here. I'll read it out. And forgive my reading, by the way, I've got dyslexia, so I don't find reading publicly very easy. But Jesus said this, "You," that's anyone who claims to be a disciple of Jesus, a follower of Jesus, and if that's you, then you're being referred to here. "You are the salt of the earth, but what good is it if salt loses flavor? Can you make it salty again? It'll be thrown out and trampled underfoot as worthless. You are the light of the world. A city on the hilltop can't be hidden. And no one lights a lamp and then puts it under a basket. Instead, a lamp is placed on a stand where it gives light to everybody in the house. So in the same way, let your good deeds shine out for all to see, so everybody will praise your heavenly Father." Now, that's a really challenging passage. Because what Jesus is telling us there is that we are not just to be people who accept the status quo. You and I know the world can often be a bad place. It can be pretty rotten. And we're not just to say, well, we've resigned ourselves to the fact that the world is the way it is and that's just life. No. Not acceptable. Not if you want to follow Jesus. We are people who have to be influential in that we make a difference on people all round about us. That's what Jesus is getting at here in this very famous passage. And he uses everyday objects to illustrate this, starting with salt. "You are the salt of the earth." It's a very famous expression. What does it mean? Well, before we get to what it means and what the metaphor of salt is meant to represent, just notice how Jesus speaks. You are. So if you say you follow Jesus, if you say you're a Christian, if you say you're a disciple, this is what you are de facto. There's no opting out. There's no excuses. This is what you are. So what does the metaphor of salt represent? Well, we got to go back and ask, what did salt do back in Jesus' day? And it had two key functions. One was it acted as a preservative. Back in the days when you've got no fridge freezers or refrigeration, etc., one of the best ways of preserving food was to get a piece of meat, if you could afford meat, and you'd rub it with salt, because that would hold back the rottenness and act as some kind of a preservative so it wouldn't decay quite so quickly. And as well as being a preservative, salt, it just makes food taste better. If you sit down to your dinner later on and you throw a fork full of food in your mouth and you think, just not quite right, what do? You reach the salt cellar and you sprinkle it. And it doesn't take much salt, does it? But a wee bit of salt lifts the whole meal. It makes it taste better. It gives joy to the meal. And you enjoy it far more. Well, said Jesus, that's exactly what you are to be in your society. First of all, we as Christians are called to be influential in that we are trying to preserve and hold back and push back on rottenness. And by the way, you know as well as I do, our culture is thoroughly rotten. We've been thinking for months in the media about, for example, corruption in high places. Do you think that's something new? No, it's not. It's always been like that. In every country around the world, the UK isn't particularly corrupt. It's just the way our world is. And in our culture, we live in a culture that's full of pornography and injustice and selfishness and greed and all kinds of other stuff, and you see it everywhere. And even conversations. How often have you been in a conversation when somebody starts gossiping about somebody who isn't there? And you've got put downs and nastiness. And that's just an ordinary, everyday conversation. And it takes place in your street. It takes place in your family sometimes. It takes place in your workplace, in your social circle. We see it everywhere. And we just get used to it. That's just the way our world is. That's just the way my society is. That's the way my workplace is. That's the way university is. It's just the way it is. And Jesus said, no, because you're meant to be salt there. You're meant to push back on that decay. Now, how do you do that when our society is so utterly corrupt at every level and is so full of rottenness? Well, the truth is you do exactly what Jesus did, where you make a difference just where you are, often in very small ways. Often in very small ways. So you're a manager in a firm, and I have an older brother who actually left his job because he's getting bullied in the workplace. He gave up from the job because his bullying became unbearable. And it's quite commonplace in competitive industries where the bosses are really hard, they're really tough, and they grind people down and they get results. And yes, we want to get results, but you're a Christian. So how you lead in your job as a manager is going to be different, because you don't accept bullying or put downs or viciousness. That's not who you are. So you'll push back. Or you're having a conversation with people. It might be folk at work or just people in your social circle. And suddenly the conversation turns a little sour, because somebody who's not there is being maligned. And the gossip starts. And can't we be very vicious with our speech? Isn't it terrible how cruel we can be with the way we talk about people? Jesus actually equated the way we talk about folk to murder. You can kill people by your words. Well, that's just the way conversations go. Well, no, it shouldn't be. Because you're salt. So because you're a Christian, you're going to say, look, guys, I hope you don't mind, but I'm not going to join in this conversation. I don't like the way you're talking about that person. That's not fair. And what you said, it's not even true. So I'm not going to participate. In fact, I'm going to defend this person. Because they're not here to defend themselves. I'm not going to get involved. Now, it takes courage. But that's how we can be an influence. Just in small things, in small ways, trying to push back on rottenness. And it can happen in 1,001 contexts. But Jesus said, that's what you are. He's placed you there to be that person. And I'm going to be very convicted come March time because I'm self-employed, as some of you are. And you know the way it is when it comes to doing your books. We all have very careful ways of massaging the figures. We can be experts on it, where you're taking all these cash payments and they'll never be declared anywhere. And then when you're doing your expenses, which is the other side of the ledger, they get exaggerated. And, you know, when I took my wife out for an overnighter the other week, well, that's going to appear in the account section as part of my expenses. And everybody does it. It's just the way life is. But no, it's not the way life ought to be. And even though the Inland Revenue have no idea what I'm doing, God knows. And I'm aware of the rottenness that pervades our society, and I'm not going to go there. I'm not going to be that kind of a person because I'm there to be salt. And in 1,001 small ways, we push back on the rottenness. And I'm grateful for the tribute we had to the Queen. Her job was quite tough. She's in a very restricted position where the eyes of the world are on her. And have you noticed in all the TV presentations and the radio presentations this week, a word that gets repeated again and again and again, she was somebody of integrity. Now, she couldn't change her job or alter the world around about her. She had to do her duty. But the way she did her duty, with quiet integrity, just doing it right, just doing it right. And the impact she's made, that's how we affect change, by doing small things in the right way. And as well as being a preservative, Jesus goes on to say salt is what it flavors your dinner. It makes life good for them. I wonder, in your life, are there people who, when they reflect on their relationship with you, think, my life is better because I know so-and-so? And again, it's the small things. There's a wee lady I'm going to be texting this weekend. She lives just down the road in Forgewood. She's elderly. Late 70s, I would guess. She has significant health issues. Life is a struggle for her, but she's a Christian. And everybody in her street loves her. Why? Well, if somebody's feeling sick or their kids are sick or whatever, she'll put a wee card to the letterbox. Just say, I'm thinking about you. If anybody in her street, no matter who they are, ends up in hospital, she'll go and visit them. She just wants to show love and kindness in the small things. And anytime I go around to visit her and she's not in, one of the neighbors will tell me all about her because she's just involved in people's lives through simple acts of kindness and love and generosity. And then there's another guy, and I'm sure you've seen the builders up on the roof. We're having the roof repaired, by the way, because of all the leaks we've got. But I got a friend of mine, and he's into his DIY in a big way. And he noticed that where he lives, there's a high preponderance of lone parent families. It's not easy bringing up kids when you're a mum and you're all on your own. So he'll knock the door, and he's a Christian. He'll just knock the door and say, by the way, I'm a handyman. Anything I can do for you, just let me know. And he does it. And in small ways, he's built up a whole circle of people who love him and appreciate him and actually now know he's a Christian just because of simple kindness and helpfulness. And those are the kind of people that we are to be. And we need to reflect seriously on some of these simple passages of Scripture and ask the question, I wonder whose life I make a difference to. I wonder, is there anybody I've brought real joy and help and encouragement to over this past month just because I am the way I am? Or I wonder, is there any situation that if it wasn't for me being in that situation, it would get worse because of my positive influence, because I'm acting as a preservative there. Now, that's what it means to be salt. And Jesus said, you're the salt of the earth. I've left you here in this world to make a difference, to affect change, and to influence your environment, often in very small ways, but that's what you do. And then he posed a question, what happens if salt stops being salty? Can you imagine if you're having your dinner And you sprinkle on a bit more salt, and it makes no difference to the taste. So you sprinkle on some more, and you still don't taste the difference. It's worthless. Now, strictly speaking, sodium chloride doesn't change its compound, but the kind of salt that Jesus would have used would have been rock salt they picked up from the Dead Sea. And if it wasn't stored properly, if damp got in, all the sodium chloride could wash out, and all you're left with is grit, and you just chuck it out. Use it to cover your path. It's of no value in and of itself. You just trample it underfoot. And Jesus said, even as a follower of me, you can lose your saltiness. How does that happen? Well, what is it that makes us salty in the first place? It's us being with Jesus. You see, what will make me the person I ought to be is if I become like Jesus. That means being a little bit less like me with all my selfishness and my self-centeredness and my ego and everything else. And I become a bit more like him. And the more I become like him, the more salty I become naturally. Jesus didn't do all those things that he did just because he felt he had to. He did those things because naturally he was holy. Utterly holy, and he was loving and gracious and kind. And so as an extension of who he was as a person, he just did all those things and it became second nature to him. And the more time we spend in relationship with Jesus, in intimacy with Jesus, the more he rubs off on us. That's why it's important, by the way, to be in church, to worship together, to experience Jesus corporately together, to take communion. In Kilmarnock tonight, so I won't be able to make communion, but being there with other Christians, remembering Christ, experiencing Christ in the center of our lives, these are important things for us. Because as we spend time with Jesus and we read our Bibles and we pray and we practice his presence in our lives, so we become more and more like him. And this just becomes second nature to us. And we become more and more salty, not by deliberately trying to be that, but just by being like Jesus. And the opposite is true. If you fall out of love with Jesus, you just stop spending time with him, notice a change in your life. You will become a different person and you'll go back the way. You'll go downhill. It'll be a retrograde step. And that's how you stop being salty. You stop spending time with Jesus. So spend time with him. Then the metaphor changes. Jesus goes on to say, you're the light of the world. Now, we don't really appreciate light very much because we live in a light pollution world. You can never get away from light. At least not if you live in a town like Motherwell or Newarthill where I stay. Where I grew up as a kid actually was the complete opposite. My first kind of 7-8 years of life, I lived in a part of northern Ethiopia, way out in the wilderness, a tiny, tiny little village. And one of the rules we always had as kids was, if the sun starts to go down, stay near the house. Now, it's a serious issue because when there's no roads and no obvious markers because it's just a wilderness and there's no street lighting and people don't even have electricity in their homes, so the scattered houses here, there, and everywhere aren't really lit up, you can get lost. It's so easy. And the sun goes down quickly and it goes from light to darkness in about 15 minutes. And you can get disorientated. And I can remember once I was about 6 or 7 years of age. I just was out for a wander. And I didn't notice the sun going down. And suddenly I realized it's pitch black here. And I had no idea what direction our house was. And I could have been walking for hours in the wrong direction, further out into the desert. And I could have died there. That's how dangerous it is. No way of knowing. How do I get back home? No way of guidance. And I was terrified, absolutely terrified. I can remember to this day how scared I felt. And my father came out looking for me, and I could see him way in the distance. I was walking the wrong direction all the time. And I could see him in the distance shouting at me and holding a torch. And once that light came to where I was, we were able to walk back on this rough ground, not stumbling, not falling, and get back home safely. Light is vitally important. If you live in darkness, And Jesus said, you are to be the light of the world. That's you. Now, Jesus referred to himself as the light of the world in John chapter 8. That's how he described himself, because he came into a world that was full of darkness, and people were stumbling around, not knowing how to live their lives, not knowing how to experience God, needing something, knowing that something was missing from their lives. And that something could be provided for by God, but they didn't know how to get there. They didn't know how life should be lived properly. How can I find peace? How can I find meaning? How can I find joy and purpose in my life? And Jesus said, I'm the light of the world. Look at me and you'll find all of those things. But here in Matthew 5, he says to all of us, you're the light of the world. So whether you're in your workplace or your home or your street, you are the light of the world. It's powerful. And that puts a big onus on us again, because how can we be light to our world? Well, first of all, by how we live our lives. Showing that Jesus actually works. Now, I'm very glad that it was mentioned earlier on about folk having lost their mother. I lost my mum when my oldest girl, who's now in her late 20s, was just a toddler. And it can be a really difficult thing to experience. My mum was the rock in my life. But having lost my mum, that rock that was a constancy for me, how I then lived as a Christian was a witness to other people. Because they could see I wasn't despondent. My mum was a Christian, a lovely Christian lady. And the joy and the buoyancy I had, my ability to cope with grief and to know that my mum was somewhere safe, that was a testament to my non-Christian friends. And one of them asked me, you missed your mum? Yeah, absolutely, I missed my mum. I loved her. But you don't seem to be distraught. I said, well, no, my mum's in heaven. She's experiencing the thing she's always had an ambition for, being with Jesus. And the conversation that led to, it was tremendous. How we live our Christian lives through the ups and downs, because life will have ups and downs, and all of you have experienced difficulty and heartache and struggles and downtimes and depression and all kinds of other stuff. That's part of life in a fallen world. But how we live through those experiences as Christians shows people that Christianity works. That having Jesus in your life makes a difference, that it shapes you, it molds how you respond to situations. But of course, being light presupposes that your life has actually changed, that you are more and more like Jesus, that his character can be seen in your life. If you're not changing very much as a Christian, then be careful, you're not going to be much of a light. But if you are changing, if you are becoming like Jesus, and through these ups and downs of life, you're living Christianly, you're exuding something of Christ's character, that's a powerful light for people. And then it's also about what you say to people. Because often as Christians, we can be guilty of living the right life, walking the walk, but we're not talking the talk. We don't tell people. We don't speak into their lives. We don't share our faith. I was talking to some folk last night just in my driveway. We were getting our wall fixed after many months of having a broken down wall. And I was talking to the brickie who's hurt his back. He's now retired as a brickie. He's 20 years of age. Retired as a brickie because his back is sore and he can't work as a bricklayer full time. And I just said, I'll pray for you. That's all I said. I'll pray for you. Now, I don't know if he's ever come across a Christian before. My neighbor who signed up this brickie knows I'm a Christian. I've had lots of conversations with him. But just saying a word at the right time, not badgering people, but just expressing your faith. Jesus spoke into so many situations in so many ways. One of my favorite passages is John 4. I'd love to look at that sometime, where he sits down at a well and he's thirsty. As you can see, I'm always thirsty. I've got a dry mouth. I'm always thirsty. And he just wanted a glass of water. He's a Jew. The lady he sat down and talked to was a Samaritan. And men shouldn't speak to women in that culture. And Jews certainly shouldn't speak to Samaritans. But he did. And he was just being friendly, warm, approachable. And began to speak into the confusion and the brokenness of her life. And read John 4 when you go home, because that whole village has changed. The whole village, because of one conversation. This is powerful stuff. But only if you've got the courage, not just to walk the walk and to live out the Christian life, but to be open about speaking about your faith. And look at the two analogies that Jesus uses here. He talks about a city up on a hill. This photograph, which you'll see coming up in a second, is taken in northern Italy, in the mountain district of Italy. I love driving through the mountains in Italy, because they build these towns up on the hillsides. They are fabulous. And day and night, you can't help but see them, because they're right up there. Think of the visibility of that. Day or night, you can see this town. And then Jesus talked about lamps. He said, you don't switch a lamp on and then hide it under a bucket. You put it on a stand so it gives light to the whole house. Now, what's he talking about here? He's talking about the visibility of our faith. Part of being a follower of Jesus is that it becomes obvious to people that we are Christians. And yes, that does mean that we live that life. We have that integrity. We live as he wants us to live. However difficult that is, however hard it is to really live out the Christian faith. And if some of you come from a home life where lots of your family aren't Christians, that's often the most difficult place of all. Often. So difficult with your family who have known you all your life, and they're not Christians, but you believe in Jesus, and you want to be different. It's so hard to live out a Jesus-type life in front of them. It's so tough. But we need to be visible. And that visibility includes speaking into people's lives. Let's not be quiet about our Christian faith. Let's not keep our heads down so that we avoid criticism or being shot down by other people or whatever. Let's be open about the fact that we're Christians. And you know, the thing I find easiest of all is just telling people when I meet them for the first time, using that phrase that I use, that bricky. In general conversation, when I'm talking to folk and they mention some issue or some problem, I'll just say to them, I'll pray for you. That's all I say. And you know what intrigues me? The number of times when I just said, I'll pray for you, people say, do you believe in God? I'll say, well, of course. I mean, I wouldn't be praying for you if I didn't believe in God. And it just leads to a natural, easy conversation. And I'm not browbeating them. I'm not giving them a hard time. I'm just saying, I'll pray for you. I've also been intrigued with the number of times people have expressed appreciation, genuine appreciation. I've even gone a stage further, and I've said to people, do you want me to pray for you just now? That takes a bit of courage. It's not easy. But when I've done that, I can't remember the last time somebody said no. And in the most bizarre of settings. Most recently, I was in Birmingham when I was on the GLOW team there, just talking to folk on the streets. And I said to somebody, do you want me to pray for you right now? And they said, okay. I have no idea what kind of a background, what kind of a worldview that person had. But they're willing for me there and then to pray for them. It doesn't take much. It doesn't take an awful lot of salt to utterly transform your meal. It just takes a wee bit. So just practice small steps. So here's an exercise of this coming week. As you go into this week, ask yourself the question, what people can I bring real joy to this week? Who can I just show an act of simple love and kindness and show them something of the character and personality of Jesus? Or what situation will I find myself in where something rotten will happen, or I'll see some rottenness? Now, how can I make a difference there? And it will take courage. It might even mean interrupting a conversation and saying, like, I'm not going to go there because I refuse to speak about people like that. But just do it. You are the salt of the earth. And how can I make my Christian life visible to people? In my home, in my street, in my workplace. How can I let people know I'm a Christian? It might be something incredibly simple. I mean, really, really simple. But just do it. And see what kind of an impact small things make. You are the salt of the world. You are the light of the world. That's what Jesus said. And so wherever you are, you take Jesus with you and you're there to be an influence, to affect change, to make a difference. So that place can be different just because you're there. And I learned this very powerfully a few years ago. I was in Australia, and every time I've been to Australia, all my friends have told me, be aware of some of the indigenous towns. And they're really talking about the Aboriginal communities, which are a real political issue in Australia. And many of these communities, because of the deprivation they experience, they are crime-ridden areas with all kinds of problems, and the government just doesn't know what to do with them. They become notorious as places to go. And I was in the outback, and I was curious to see what one of these settlements looks like. So I drove to a place. I can't even remember the name of the place. And I actually went to visit a couple, and he was a coal miner. Now, they weren't Aboriginals. He was a coal miner, and she's a nurse. And they felt so concerned for this particular town, which was notorious. It was a no-go area for police, that they went and they got a house there. And they live right in the middle of it. And he's a coal miner. He's not a pastor. He's not a missionary. He's just a coal miner. That's what he does. He goes down the pit and digs off coal. And they just went to love people and care for folk. And they noticed that lots of kids were suffering from all kinds of illnesses, and their teeth are falling out and all kinds of other stuff because of a lack of fruit. So they would go to a market and buy tons of fruit and just walk around the streets giving out fruit to kids. They became known as the lemon and orange man, giving out loads of fruit, just giving it out to show people love. And they began gathering folk together, and they don't actually have a church building. They go to the side of the road, and he'll put up a speaker and get his guitar, and suddenly you've got about 50 or 60 folk all gathering around. They meet in the open air. Most of those folk aren't Christians. But here's a couple who just love them, who try to help solve marital difficulties in the town, who will intervene in court cases, who will speak on behalf of people when they get in trouble with the police. They're just being loving. And I was able to walk through this notorious town feeling totally, totally safe because I was a friend of this couple, this coal miner and his nurse wife, who went to live in that area just to show Jesus' love. And everybody knows them. Everyone knows them. In fact, when there's a real hoolie going off, the police phone him and say, can you go and sort it out for us? Because everyone respects him. Isn't that incredible? Just simple things. Bringing Jesus, affecting change. We should be influential. So ask yourself, what influence will I be this week? Let's just pray. Father, help us to take seriously Jesus' words. We are the salt of the world. We're the light of the world. Help us to be that in our homes, in our workplaces, with our neighbors. Help us to bring Jesus there and affect change. Give us that strength, and may we be influencers for good, for Jesus' sake. Amen.